Blog Talk Radio.
To be the man, you gotta beat the man. You wanna find out how good you are? You're looking at the Matrix shit. Let's go hook him up!
Another edition of Over the Top Radio. I am your host, Ed, in San Antonio, and I'm joined by only one of my co-hosts tonight, Katrina. What's going on, Katrina?
Not much. What's going on?
Not too much. Just trying to watch the Spurs play in the corner of my eye as I look at my computer screen here. And just been chilling today. Had lunch with Barb earlier. That's about it. I don't know what my plans are tonight, but I'm just chilling. I didn't get to watch the pay-per-view this weekend, and I think I was supposed to, like, call and wake you up so you could watch it. So I don't know. Did you ever get to watch the replay since I think you overslept?
No, well, I woke up and watched it. I was just fucking with you.
Oh, okay.
It's a good show.
I heard it was actually a good pay-per-view,
man.
It's one of the
better shows
they've
had in a while.
I got to see the first match before I left for work. And, Kofi and Alberto had an awesome little match. So I knew it got off to a good foot. And I actually snuck my phone in just through security so I could get the updates while I was at work. And, everything, it sounded like it was a good show. I kind of thought about ordering the replay, but since I already knew what happened, I was like, yeah, fuck it, just save my money for Mania. And, but what did you think of the show?
Oh, it was a great show. I thought it was, from top to bottom, probably one of the best shows they've had in a long time. Really nothing terrible on the show. I mean, there's some segments here and there that were kind of bad, but I usually just kind of like the matches and stuff like that, so.
That's cool. I heard, I know, like, Brian and Vinny and all them were saying that Dave said they liked the SmackDown Elimination Chamber better. Which one did you enjoy the better?
Yeah, I'd like the SmackDown Elimination Chamber better. The Raw one was like just beneath it, as far as that goes. So I'd put them just about even. Maybe SmackDown just a little bit higher, just because of Ray and Edge. They had a bunch of good stuff at the end.
Yeah, I heard that was awesome. And it was surprising. It's like, it almost seems like there's a pay-per-view every other week, but this is the first time there's actually going to be 6 weeks between pay-per-views. So I think the WWE, I mean, you know, for people, as much as people say that it's the business is down, you know, which obviously it is. Well, I mean, they still make a profit, but, you know, it's not like what they should be making. And, you know, they say interest is down, but, you know, the Royal Rumble was a good start, and then they bring in the fucking Rock. And now you follow that up with a really, really, really good pay-per-view. And in my opinion, they even have more momentum right now than they actually did at this time last year. And, you know, last year they had the whole Bret Hart thing going at the beginning before they kind of screwed it up. But, I'm very excited for WrestleMania this year. I mean, and
it
was,
and
like
they followed
I say,
up good on. They followed up good on Monday with the 2/21/11 thing, with Undertaker and Triple H. I thought that was awesome.
Oh yeah, that was fantastic. I mean, Jesus Christ, they didn't even have to say one fucking word, you know. And that, I mean, that was fucking. Undertaker is just phenomenal. I mean, every facial that he expression that he made that night was just perfect. From, you know, just when he comes out normal, and then when Triple H's music hit, and he just had that look of fucking like, you motherfucker, you know, look at his face. And then when they stared down, and then Triple H looked at the Mania sign, and then, you know, Undertaker did it all slow and dramatic, slow, took his time, looked at the sign, and then the way he just kind of smirked at him and laughed, and they came back. I mean, that was just, you know, I'm not the biggest Triple H fan because of all the shit he does backstage, but, I mean, I'll be the first to say he's always been a great performer, but I'm very excited for this match now.
I think they're going to have a, you know, just despite, like, whatever physical problems Taker has, you know, they're two veterans. They can put together a hell of a match if they want to, and I think that's what they're going to do.
Yeah, they can be. I mean, let's think back to the Shawn Michaels Triple H SummerSlam match. As dramatic as that match was, they didn't do anything. I mean, these guys are so good. You know, the crowd's going to be so split and awesome. I mean, they're not going to have to do anything, and it'll be a good match. And I still think they'll actually pull something out work-wise that's pretty good. I mean, they really step up their game, you know, in
yeah,
the big matches.
Some people are saying that, well, there's no, like, everybody knows Taker's going to win. Well, I pretty much knew Taker was going to win the last 2 years, and those two matches kept me on the edge of my seat the entire time, so.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, if any matches were going to be, I mean, close, those were the only two. I mean, look at all the other matches where you knew he was going to win, and, you know, I mean, that's part
I mean,
of the gimmick that
the
he don't
lose.
I don't really care
who wins or loses. I just care about the performance in the match. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, and then I thought the Jerry Lawler thing was fucking fantastic. I think I might even have to say that might have even been better than fucking, or just right up there with the Undertaker Triple H thing. I mean, Jerry was fucking awesome. You know,
yeah.
The way he was just standing there taking it, and then when he finally snapped and just pulled Cole to his face and fucking, dude, I mean, that looked, I mean, yeah, I'm sure it was Jerry's idea, but, I mean, it looked real. It had that sense of realism to it. And then, like, when he threw the water, that was straight out of Andy Kaufman and David Letterman. And I didn't hear too many people make that connection, but that's, you know, basically what it was. And,
yeah, when he slapped Andy Kaufman, and Kaufman threw the coffee at him and chased him away.
Yeah.
Just, yeah, I didn't have
I
a problem. Some people had a problem with him bringing up his mother, but Jerry Lawler's done nothing like
that
his entire
idea.
Life in Memphis.
You know that was his whole idea. You know that was his idea.
Yeah, plus he's done angles like that in Memphis. You know, like, I mean, they've done angles where people have accused Jerry Lawler of killing Andy Kaufman with the pile driver or something like that. I didn't think it was a big deal.
Right? I mean, shit, he's been up for statutory rape a couple times. I mean, you know, no big deal. And I thought Cena was fucking, that was the best promo he's cut in years. And I always think he does great promos regardless. But his response to The Rock was fucking 5 stars.
Yeah, I love that. That was awesome.
Yeah, and I like how they just said, fuck the TV, you know what I mean, well, just before that. You know, that's how you can tell they're making a big deal out of it. And that was pretty cool. And I didn't have a problem, like everybody was bitching about the main event. I didn't have a problem. I mean, okay, yeah, the titles are a joke, whatever. I mean, they've been a joke for years. Who really gives a fuck
at this
point?
Nobody cares about the tag team titles anymore.
Yeah,
Jesus
but the
Christ.
Important thing is and Dave and Brian have said this themselves, they're on the kick, they're trying to make The Miz be strong. Like, he pinned Danielson clean, he pinned Lawler clean. What that whole fucking thing was, it wasn't about the tag team titles, it was about The Miz hitting his finisher on Cena, and Cena being pinned by fucking Heath Slater, of all people. That's how devastating his move is, that Cena was pinned by Heath Slater. It's putting over his move, it's putting him over the way Brian and Dave, especially Brian, had been complaining about. You've been complaining about him not being strong, so he goes out there, lays out Cena to where Jabroni pins him, and you're going to complain about the tag team titles. I mean, get your fucking priorities straight.
Yeah, I mean, you remember all those years where they had the where people were on the internet saying, man, why don't they push the fucking cruiserweights? Or, man, you got to do something with the cruiserweights or something. And they finally got rid of that shit because they got rid of the title. Now, get rid of the tag team titles and you won't hear anything about this tag team title bullshit anymore. So, you know.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. I've always been a fan of tag team matches. You know, some of the greatest matches I've ever seen were tag team matches. But, I mean, at this point, you know, you got
to. Not anymore.
Yeah, not anymore. And then, like I say, the important thing was getting the Miz's finisher over is proving that he can beat Cena, you know, and making him more of a redeemable champion. And, you know, you have to sacrifice, you know. Anyone who thinks the tag team titles are more important than getting the Miz's finisher over before WrestleMania, you know, you're totally looking at it the wrong way.
Yeah. I'm sitting here, I'm on Dixie Carter's Twitter right now. Looking at, I was reading some of these things from the great 3-3-11 thing they did last night. Did you see that?
I heard about it from the Brian and Vinny show.
That company has no shame.
Yeah, that was pretty funny.
It says, somebody saying, man, your company sucks. How about you go suck a dick and that'll be useful entertainment?
I wouldn't mind her sucking my dick. But well, what's funny is somebody even said that they use the same font.
Yeah, they did. Like, and, you know, I saw on the board, like, a bunch of people were saying, well, you guys were so excited when Sting was going to WWE. Now he's back in TNA, y'all are shitting all over. That's because he was going to WWE where he'd never been before, you bunch of dumb shit.
Yeah,
it,
he was going to have a thing with The Undertaker. Now he's going to fucking fuck around with Jeff Jarrett.
Yeah, I mean, the shocking thing was they re-signed the guy that they sign every year, that they re-sign every single fucking year. Big fucking shock.
I know, and they make a big deal about it every year, too.
Jesus Christ.
He's got an easy job, man. He makes money and doesn't have to do too much, so you can't hate on Sting, but goddamn,
they're
stupid.
If you got some dumb shit that's willing to pay you that amount of money, I say go for it. I ain't going to say nothing bad about you.
Right. But we'll go ahead and we'll start. We were going to do The Rock, but then Craig texted me saying he couldn't do the show. He actually didn't even tell me why he couldn't do the show. But since he's not here, we'll go ahead and postpone it, and hopefully we'll get to do it on a week where The Rock actually comes out, maybe make it even more of a big deal. So we'll still be doing that coming up here very soon. But so what we decided to do is everybody likes us talking about the old territories and the old time wrestling. So we're basically, we just got like the rosters from the different territories, and we're just going to go through the wrestlers that are on the rosters and talk about some of the people a lot of the listeners may have never heard of or names people haven't heard in years. And then we'll talk about some of their angles and matches. And basically we're going to be all over the place talking about a whole lot of different people. So, but a lot of people seem to enjoy that, so I guess we could go ahead and...
You got that list I sent you?
Yeah, I got the list. I actually, I had seen a lot of them on Google earlier, but I'm glad you sent this. There's one of them that's just fucking long as hell, or a couple of them. And then there's like Memphis, there's like hardly a few names. It's like, goddammit, I know more people wrestle than Memphis than that.
Yeah.
But did you download the XFL I asked you to?
Yeah, sure did.
Oh, you did? Well, go ahead, and because I want to talk about this guy, because I know a lot of people fell asleep during the Bruce Hart interview, but they actually talked about this. And to me, this is one of my personal top five, if not maybe top three promos of all time. And I also want to talk about the guy's character, because the guy's gimmick was probably one of the greatest gimmicks of all time, and I'm sure a lot of people never even heard of him, let alone seen him. So let me see if I can play this here. 225, right?
Yeah, that's right.
I'm in front of the ring. So busy jarring with the crowd. I've never seen anything like that.
Let me tell you something. Archer, Mustafa, Goldie, I've been planning this for a long time. You've been running your mouth that you wanted my belt. You wanted the championship from me. But you thought tagging up with me was going to make me to forget the vendetta I had for you. Put the camera over there and take a look at this man. Take a look at him. Take a look at his son there. I broke his neck. I crippled him. I helped the son of God die. Look at his office. Take a look at him. Look at the man there. Look at him.
Well, I am in a state of shock, that's all. I have never seen anything quite like this. Stop, or I don't know if you have. I've never seen anything like it.
No, Ed?
It was ridiculous.
That kid has asked me to train him to wrestle since he was old enough to talk. I've trained him. I didn't want him to start. I didn't want him to wrestle. But he begged me and he said, Dad, I want to follow in your footsteps. I want to be a professional wrestler. I said, okay, Jeff. He had a few matches down in the States where he went to school. He said, Dad, I want to go up and I want to wrestle in front of my grandma and my uncles and aunts and nieces and everybody else up in my home, our home country up in Western Canada. So I brought him up here and I said, I'm not real proud of it. Bringing him up here, bringing him anywhere and starting him. I'm not real proud of it at all. I've been called a lot of things in my career since I've been a professional wrestler. But one thing that nobody can ever say is that I've taken advantage of a young boy. I've wrestled young boys in the ring. But I've never taken advantage of them like that kid was taken advantage of tonight. There was a couple people involved here, Ed. One of them trained with me for several days in the gymnasium, right beside me and my son, sweating together, our own sweat, getting ready for the big one, patting them on the back, say, kid, this is the big one, this is your chance. Take him out here on the concrete floor. They just took him away in the ambulance. I'm not going to holler and scream tonight, Edward. First thing I'm going to do is I'm going to the hospital and see how my kid is. And I'm going to say, Jeff, I'm sorry. You're not going to wrestle anymore. But I am. I'm going to wrestle some more. And it's time to get even. That might be the wrong thing to say in a situation like now, maybe a time like this. But I'm sure not going to go up and shake the man's hand that did it to my son.
Yeah.
And you know, we are professional wrestlers. I'm not out here crying for myself. I'm just sorry I started my son in the wrestling profession. But I'm still fine and well. And just as soon as I leave that hospital and find out my kid is okay, I'm coming back to the ring, Edward. And I don't know which one I'm going to take on first. I'm going to put everything aside. I'm going to put all the championship belts away back in the corner, the furthest thing from my mind. I'm going to get the man that hurt my son. And I promise him.
He's going to be the sorriest individual that ever put on a pair of wrestling boots or ever stepped into the squared circle.
Is that it?
Yeah, that's it.
Okay. Yeah, that I'm sure a lot of people have never even heard of Archie Goldie, the Mongolian Stomper. This is like really late in his career when he pretty much started going by the name Archie Goldie. But if you're just hearing that, you don't even think it's a wrestling promo. You think you're watching, it's like from a movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, the thing, it's so believable that the first time I ever heard the promo, I actually thought that the kid was his son. You know what I mean? I didn't know it was just some kid who came in for a few weeks and that was the way to write him out, you know?
Yeah.
But, I mean, that was just a fantastic promo. And you don't see shit like that anymore. But what I liked about the Mongolian, did you ever see the Mongolian Stomper?
I have not seen much of him.
Okay, well, the Mongolian Stomper, he always looked old. He always looked like Baron von Rossi. Well, not as old as Baron von Rossi, but he always looked old, but he was always fucking just ripped. I mean, he was always, he had like the greatest bodybuilder. He was just like, you know, everything was big, strong, ripped. And he was pretty much bald, and he had like furry boots, and he pretty much did like the Mongolian Savage. You know, he was just a savage. He would just go in there and just beat you to death. But he had the coolest fucking gimmick because he had this gimmick, and I can't believe no one's ever tried this since. He had this gimmick where he had to wear an amateur wrestling headgear. And the reason that he had to wear this headgear is because he had this inner ear infection. And loud noises would hurt him and would cause him pain. But what happened is during the match, he'd be getting the heat on one of the baby faces, or maybe one of the hearts, and he'd just be beating on him so bad that the crowd would just start, you know, getting loud, trying to cheer with the baby face, and it would hurt the Mongolian Stomper, and he would sell to the crowd's applause, so, and the crowd knew to get loud, so. Some of the matches that he had and the buildings he had, I mean, it was just insane how loud it would get because the fans, you know, it was part of the gimmick. They had to help the babyface by fucking getting as loud as possible to cause him pain and allow the babyface to recover. I mean, it was just fucking one of the greatest fucking gimmicks of all fucking time.
Yeah, I remember the last time I heard of him was, I think he worked at Smoky Mountain Wrestling a lot when they were in business, like in the mid-90s.
I know he did like the Legends show. I know he did the Legends show. I got that DVD.
Yeah, and the story was that he would ride his bicycle to all the towns to make the shows.
Wow. Well, like
that's
I
what it said in After Mags. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's just what it said.
Yeah, well, you can't question the After Mags, man. That should go what they say is true.
Now, remember, you know, he worked, down in Alabama and stuff like that, I believe, also.
Yeah, and he'd go everywhere. He'd wrestle here in San Antonio, and I'm sure there's a match on the Wrestling Guild where he wrestles Dick Slater in a cage match. That's pretty good.
Now, if I remember correctly, that's the angle that made Ed Whalen quit, like, right after that.
Yeah. Well, they just kind of, like, exposed the story on the interview. That was a work. He was actually leaving to go do like playoff hockey games for like 3 weeks.
Oh.
So it ended
up,
yeah.
What I heard was anytime they had anything violent, he would edit it out of the show.
Yeah. Well, I heard about that. He'd be all up in arms and kind of crazy stuff like that. But I mean, he added to that promo, making it look real, that's for sure. And stuff. But yeah, that's just one of the, in my opinion, one of the best gimmicks. Is there anybody you wanted to talk about?
From where?
We can start with anywhere. Just pick a territory.
Let's just start at the top of the list in Memphis. And
okay.
You know, kind of, I'm looking through this list. This is kind of like a who's who. You got everybody from Andy Kaufman to Bam Bam Bigelow to Jim Neidhart, Jerry Lawler, of course, Jesse Ventura, Jimmy Valiant, King Kong Bundy, it seems like everybody, if they were, especially like in the mid-'80s or early 80s or something, anybody that was anybody that kind of went through Memphis at one time or another.
This, their crew also kind of stayed together a lot. I mean, because you have names that have been, that are just like just pretty much associated with just that territory. You know, I mean, I know Bill Dundee's been everywhere, but most people associate him with Memphis, and you always see like it's always a bunch of Southerners, like the Armstrongs and the Fullers, and you know, and they are, you know, guys like that. So a lot of the baby faces, if you look at the baby faces on this list, they all kind of wrestle the same. You know,
yeah.
Your young, fiery baby face, Tommy Rich, Terry Taylor, Pat Armstrong, you know, guys like that. And,
this was a territory where guys that, you know, most of the mainstays, these were not big guys, if you look at this list. You know, like a Bill Dundee, Jerry Lawler, Eddie Gilbert, Jeff Jarrett, guys like that. These are mostly small guys working the territory.
Biggest guys on here are King Kong Bundy and Bam Bigelow. The only really jacked up guy on this list is Jesse Ventura, as far as, you know, the bodybuilder type. Not that like
I guess you
could
say Austin Idol too.
He was pretty big. He was always like big, but he was never like super rich. But he always,
Austin
he
Idol
always had
was one of the guys that every month in the aftermath you read what he didn't show up for this match, or he left without dropping the belts, or you know, he just walked. He must have walked out. I don't know how many times. Him and people like Eddie Gilbert just walked out of the company or got fired or something. You know.
Yeah. But the thing with him, most of the time it was with Memphis. It was like Eddie was always different territories.
Yeah.
Boston Idol, it seemed like it was always Memphis or Continental. But one name that's on here is a name that I remember when I first started watching Georgia. And that I'm sure everyone's familiar with Colonel Rob Parker, Robert Fuller. But did you ever see Ron Fuller wrestle?
I think I may have seen him wrestle maybe once or twice. I know he's a big guy. Wasn't he like about 6'7"?
He might have been 6'7", but, you know, they pushed him as being a lot taller than 6'7". They didn't push him as being 7 foot, but maybe like 6'9", maybe.
Yeah.
And he was actually a very good worker. I mean, because he was really tall, but he wasn't, like, awkward. You know what I mean? Like, he wasn't, like, super huge. I mean, he was actually kind of thin, you know, for his size. And he was pretty good. I remember seeing him in Georgia, and I remember him being called the Tennessee Stud. And then later on, when I heard, like, Robert Fuller being called the Tennessee Stud, I was like, man, whatever happened to that other guy? Forgetting that his name was Ron Fuller and realizing that it was his brother.
Yeah, like I said, I never saw much of Ron Fuller. I always liked Robert Fuller. I thought he was pretty. I thought he was a good worker.
Yeah, he was pretty decent. I remember seeing him like.
Anything with Jimmy Golden and stuff like that at the Stud Stable.
Yeah, and also he seemed with Jarrett for a while in like the USWA. And Colonel Rob Parker was fucking awesome. I mean,
yeah, Colonel Rob Parker.
Yeah,
Tennessee Lee.
And then one name I noticed on here is Ron Bass. How much do you remember of Ron Bass?
I don't remember much of Ron Bass in Memphis. I obviously remember him in like Mid-Atlantic and Florida, and and obviously WWF with the feud with the Beefcake.
Yeah, where he cut him with the spur, right? Wasn't Beefcake getting injured right before like the pay-per-views because of something like that?
Yeah, it was 88 he got injured before, couldn't make the match. And then in 1990, you know, he had that bad wreck in the parasailing thing. And then just about killed him. And he had come out, like Ron Bass was he's beating up a jobber or something. So he took what was his whip's name? Was it Betty Lou or Miss Betsy. Miss Betsy.
Yeah, that's right.
Was the whip name, and he cut up Miss Betsy. So Bass comes out the next week and attacks him and takes the Spurs. And they had the big X on the screen where they wouldn't show you what's happening.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
That was awesome. Yeah, I like
Rob Bass was
Bass when he was, like, in Mid-Atlantic, like, teaming with Black Bart and stuff like that. I really liked him.
Yeah, he was like, he was just a big old, just a big old guy. He wasn't like muscular. He was just like a big guy. I don't really want to say fat, but just kind of chunky, I guess. I don't know what's the best way. He had this like handlebar fucking mustache.
Yeah, he had awesome mustache.
Yeah, he had, I mean, the mustache is 5 stars, and he was just a big bully type, you know, Texan guy. And I remember him. He had a really big suit with Barry Windham. In Florida, when Barry Windham did the Dirty Yellow Dog gimmick. And
I remember him when he was in Mid-Atlantic, he turned babyface against J.J. Dillon, had a feud with, like, Buddy Landell, and then they had the big four-rope match with him and Black Bart at Starrcade 85.
Yeah, and then he wins the match, but then he gets, like, a match with J.J., and J.J. wins that match. The four-rope.
I hope that
doesn't
happen in WrestleMania. I hope Jerry Lawler didn't, like, beat Alex Riley or something, get 5 minutes with Cole, and Cole wins.
I know, I always never understood that when I read that in the results. It's like, how the fuck did J.J. Dillon be wrong? I always thought that was kind of absurd when I'm reading that. But, like, and then we talked about Austin Idol. He was always like, you could tell he was like big Ric Flair mark or Buddy Rogers mark for having the bleach smile. I heard he's like, skinny. He's not jacked at all anymore.
Was he in the car? Was he in the airplane wreck crash with Ric Flair?
Yeah, he was in it.
Yeah, I thought I remember it was a different name.
No. He wasn't in the Ric Flair. He was in the Gary Hart plane crash.
Oh yeah, the one where I remember that story of Gary Hart. He like survived the crash and he's like going up to somebody that was
being
like
naked
with his eye hanging out of the socket and his bones broken and. Just like some out of a horror movie I heard, and you know, had to call and get help. Yeah, no, I knew it was a plane crash. I wasn't sure which one it was. I couldn't remember Austin Idol's real name. That's why I couldn't remember which crash it was. But Austin Idol, yeah, I'd say to me, Andy Kaufman and Lawler would like the biggest feud, but I think I'll put right next to it Austin Idol and Tommy Rich against Jerry Lawler.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
And they had the hair mask, and they almost had to have a ride in the Mid-South Coliseum.
Yeah, that was pretty crazy. I remember seeing this, but those people were fucking insane, dude. Like, the majority of the Memphis, like, of the Memphis myths, like, that period that I've seen is from the Wrestling Gold DVDs, and there is quite a bit of it. But you look at that crowd, and I'm sorry, but those fucking redneck hicks, every single one of them believes pro wrestling is real. And that's not an exaggeration because these people would fucking go kick shit for fucking shit, dude. I mean, that was a pretty wacky audience.
They may have been like one of the best drawing territories because they could get, when they wanted every Monday, they could get maybe like around 10,000 people in that Mid-South Coliseum.
And the thing is, you know, if they wrestle like fucking basically 7 days, you know, a week, and they're doing that attendance. But yet you hear the wrestlers talk about they always cry and bitch about they didn't make no money in Memphis.
Well, I figure if he was on top, he made money.
Yeah, I figure Jerry Lawler and a few other guys made money. But
plus Memphis was a place where they had like one of the smarter booking scenarios where, you know, like Lawler would book for 6 months and then Jerry Jarrett would book for 6 months.
Yeah.
You know, they just like take
up.
Turns. Yeah.
Yeah. And anyone else on this list you want to talk about?
See. We got about Sid Vicious. This is where we got Sid Vicious from Memphis.
Now, was he Vicious or Lord Humongous?
He was Lord Humongous in Continental, I believe.
Uh-huh.
And Sid Vicious in Memphis. And I just remember him coming out, and he, like, broke Jamie Dundee's neck in, like, 1 week.
Uh-huh.
Because Sid Vicious had jumped Bill Dundee and broken his neck, but that's where Sid Vicious came from. And one of the other best angles was, like, the Bill Dundee and Buddy Landell angle with the Bill and Buddy show. Did you ever see that?
No, I never saw that.
That was the one where they attacked Jeff Jarrett, who's the referee. You know, it was the one that Brian and Vinny talked about a while back.
Yeah, I kind of remember them talking about him at the show with Jarrett.
Yeah, they had, like, attacked Jeff Jarrett. He was a referee. And then, like, Jerry Jarrett came out, and they tried to, like, I guess Jerry Jarrett has, like, a glass eye, and they tried to take his eye out. So Jerry Lawler had like, lost a loser leave town or something. And so they got on the phone. Dutch Mantell was out there. He was, and they spent, like, the rest of the show trying to get Lawler on the phone, and they were going to come back for the big match with Bill Dundee and Buddy Landell. And I think that drew pretty well. But that was an awesome program, too. And Buddy Landell, he's another guy that never lasted too long in one place.
That's because he likes to do too much drugs back in the day.
I remember he was getting the big push in, for Crockett, and then he didn't make the Saturday show one day, and he got fired. And then he went back to Memphis and got fired from there. He went to the UWF, got fired from there. And he was always a decent worker when he was younger, I thought.
Well, the thing with Buddy Landell is he was a decent worker. He was a good worker. He didn't look the part. I'm sorry, but the dude is just not good looking enough to be a fucking nature boy. You know, not when you got Ric Flair and not when you got Buddy Roberts out there. I'm sorry, but Buddy Landell was a fucking poor man's version of the two of them, just because the dude is not a good looking dude. And I just never really take him too seriously.
Yeah, I was the same way, and I've always kind of been like, when you know you hear the stories of Buddy Landell was going to get the NWA title like in 1986 or something. I don't know. This kind of sounds a little far fetched to me, to be honest with you. I mean, he was good for an underneath guy, but as the world's champion, he wasn't that good.
Yeah, that's true. And,
more names on this. Dutch Mantell, I always liked Dutch Mantell. He was a good worker. He's a hell of a talker. My favorite, Jimmy Valiant's on here.
I remember the first time I saw Dutch Mantell, he was teaming with Bobby Taggart as the
Kansas Jayhawks.
The Kansas City Jayhawks, yeah. And, I would say it was pretty good.
Let's look at the tag teams down here real quick that came out of here. I think probably still the most famous tag team of this area was probably the Fabulous. Do you agree?
The which one?
The Fabulous Ones.
What are you talking about, dude? You got the Zamboy Express on here.
Oh, fuck.
You're
going
to tell me they're not the greatest tag team in the whole fucking territory that territory already saw?
What I'm saying is the Fabulous Ones, although like teams like the Rock and Roll Express and the Fantastics kind of came out of a team like the Fabulous Ones. The Fabulous Ones are always like they were the most popular team in the history of the Memphis area. Playing.
Yeah. They were pretty good. I mean, I got to see them like wrestle like the Road Warriors, and then see them wrestle the Moondogs, and they were always pretty good. I always liked the Rock and Roll and the Fantastics better though.
Yeah, me too. I actually like the Fantastics better than the Rock and Roll or the Fabulous Ones.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way too.
And some more bad company came out of here. Paul Diamond and Pat Tanaka.
Got the RPM.
Oh, yeah.
You got the
they came out to Loverboy. They came out to Loverboy, so they were okay with me.
I'm sorry, what?
I said Rock and Roll RPMs came out to Loverboy, so they were okay with me.
I know, but you had the two ugliest motherfuckers trying to be fucking rock and roll sex symbols in the 80s, dude.
Yeah.
I mean, they're like in the Buddy Landell category. They didn't look the fucking part, man.
Yeah. Like, we're gonna throw some bandanas on our ankles and call ourselves a rock and roll team. Where did I see that?
I mean, Mike Davis had a good run in Global when he found the moon rock, but I mean... I remember when they wrestled fucking, they teamed with Cactus Jack and they wrestled the Guerreros, and I don't think they got one offensive move in that whole match.
That Super Clash?
Yeah, the Super Clash.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone got one move in there on the three of them, dude, if you go back and look.
And the Nasty Boys came out of here. It says the Midnight Rockers, but they were more AWA than Mid-Southern or Memphis.
Yeah.
They just kind of had a short run in between when they were in the AWA. Although they did have a feud with Rock and Roll Express that I watched on YouTube in Memphis, which is pretty cool.
Oh, wow. I got to check that out.
Yeah. That was pretty cool. So,
you
want
to go to Mid-South?
Yeah, Mid-South. We can go to that. And a lot of... A lot of world class guys here. I'm seeing at the start, Chris Adams.
Yeah, it's actually kind of like a good mix, really. Cause you got the main world class guys' names are all on here, basically. But
yeah,
this is
when Kim Mantell came in as the booker and he took a bunch of guys, like the Freebirds, and Chris Adams and people like that, and brought them in.
Yeah, but you know, I'm looking at this list, and one of the first things that's kind of catching my eye here is Window Cooley. Did you ever see Window Cooley?
Yeah, I thought he was decent. I thought he was a pretty good little worker.
Yeah, I remember he was kind of like a little bit of a bigger, younger version of Scott Casey. Because he looked exactly like fucking Scott Casey.
Didn't he team with Al Perez in Southwest?
He teamed with, I'm sure he did, and then a little bit with Scott. And I remember on his last match out, his name was Rick Casey. He went by Rick Casey. He was Scott Casey's brother in Mid-South. And his last match in, he fucking just got destroyed by fucking the Maniac Mark Lewin, who had just come in either that week or the week before real soon. But it was just, I guess they knew he was leaving for Mid-Atlantic. But, they jumped him out that last match. But he always said he was really good. I thought he was going to be... he was a future big star. I mean, because, you know, Scott Casey was awesome. And like I said, he was like the younger, stronger, bigger version of Scott Casey. So I figure he would do something. But you just heard a little bit about him in Mid-Atlantic and then a little bit in Mid-South. And you really didn't hear too much about him after that.
Didn't Scott Casey have another brother? Steve Casey?
Who?
Steve Casey?
Man, I really don't. To be honest with you, dude, I really don't know.
I think that he was billed as like being Scott Casey's brother or something like that.
It's just so insignificant. It's slipping my mind here.
I see one of my favorite valets of all time, Dark Journey. I thought she was hot.
Yeah, she was pretty hot, and but I can never tell if she was black or Mexican, or if she was a Blackican. You know? What was she?
I don't know.
That's a big question. What was Dark
Journey? She's
like
the female Darren Young. We don't know what she is.
Well, I think he ended up being black. But Dark Journey, she was pretty hot. She kind of had that, like, she came out like when... like around the time of Purple Rain, Purple Rain was hanging out with like Apollonia and Vanity. She kind of like had that kind of a look to her.
Yeah, I remember I was watching when I think Jake Roberts got blinded in an angle by Dick Slater, and he accidentally DDT Dark Journey. I said, "Holy shit! Never seen nothing like that."
Yeah, that was a trip.
Whatever happened to her? Her and Sunshine just like disappeared.
Yeah, they disappeared, and she was. Dark Journey was in Mid-South, And then she went to fucking Mid-Atlantic NWA for a little while.
Yeah, she was totally
different. That's the last I really remember of her. And then Sunshine, I just think, just had a lot of personal issues that kept her from staying in.
Why have you never all these shooting interview people found these women yet?
The what?
They can find anybody. All these people that do these shooting interviews.
Yeah, look shit, man. They should get these chicks on there.
I just remember the story from Mid-South was, okay, Dark Journey was in a relationship with Dick Slater. She screwed around with Sting, and Dick Slater beat the shit out of Sting and stuck his head in the toilet. Fighting in the dressing room. That's what I remember.
Yeah, and then
she's always with Missy Link. I like the stuff they did with Dark Journey and Missy Hyatt. I thought that was good stuff.
Oh, yeah. Missy was hot back then.
Yeah.
And she was real fucking hot. I'm looking at the name down the list here, and I'm seeing a name. Do you remember DJ Patterson? David Patterson here.
Peterson.
Peterson. Yeah, Peterson. God damn it, I'm fucking blind or something, or a little too high. Yeah.
Yeah, David, I remember Peterson. Him. He was. He kind of looked like Magnum T.A. with his mustache. And I think he and the Trooper were like the last AWA World Tag Team Champions.
Yeah, it was, and the Trooper with Dale Wilkes, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, and DJ Peterson, he got killed in a motorcycle wreck. I recall.
Yeah, he got killed in a motorcycle wreck. I remember he came to San Antonio a little bit after Southwest had changed, and he came with a valet. I think her name might have been Fantasy, but then they had a breakup, and then, like, she kind of, like, took, like, Al Madrillo and maybe Chavo, and then, like, he feuded with them. And, yeah, he was always that. He had, he was always okay. He just never had, like, that little it factor, I guess.
Yeah.
You know? And, but, yeah, I mean, he always had potential. I mean, it's kind of, you know, a shame that he, you know, got killed in a motorcycle accident and stuff. But one guy on here that I want to talk about is the Mad Dog Buzz Sawyer.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if you were watching it back then in Georgia in the early days, but Buzz Sawyer in those early 80s, 80, 81, maybe 82, was the top, might have been the top heel in the business because he was the top heel in Georgia. And Georgia at that time had the most people watching it and stuff. And, you know, he was just fucking a fucking animal, dude. He was just like, I don't know if this is a good comparison, but he was like a sadistic Kurt Angle.
Yeah, and
more of a brawler than a technical wrestler, but at the same time he could wrestle and he would just manhandle people like if Kurt Angle was had more of a brawling style and a vicious heel, it was that's kind of like what Buzz Sawyer was.
Yeah,
and he just came off as being fucking crazy because he had this like way he breathed where it just. Like it was like a wheezing. I don't know if you remember.
And
I remember he went to WWF for like a couple weeks as Bulldog. Was it Bulldog? Bulldog Buzz Sawyer. And it was like one of the Freebird. It was like the Freebird thing because it was just he was in and out. You know.
He was on. There was some kind. They had some kind of interview segment. I can't remember who was hosting. It wasn't like Piper's Pit. It was I don't know what it was. And I think it was like they had put him with Bobby Heenan or somebody like that. And I never saw him again.
Yeah, but he was great in Georgia, and then he was still pretty good in Mid South and World Class. But I mean,
he was a great
that dude with Tom. Yeah, he was great, dude. And you do it in a brawling style of being a great worker. You know what I mean? A lot of the people who are brawlers because they weren't great workers. But He was good. And then Tommy Rich was just...
Go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, Tommy Rich was a perfect opponent. You know, the young, hot, you know, good-looking baby face. And they went everywhere, dude. They got booked. They got booked outside of Georgia because I remember them coming fucking here to have a match. And I remember just the whole, the feel of the audience just was, like, changed when the main event was about to start. I mean, everybody was into the show. It was a good show. It was a really good show, actually. And when the main event was about to be introduced, everybody stood up. I mean, not one person sat down that entire fucking time, and it wasn't even that long of a match, dude. And to be honest with you, they never even got in the ring. They started brawling outside, and it was just a brawl outside, and within 2 minutes, they were bloody, and it might have been over even 6 minutes later. You know what I mean? It really wasn't that long, but for what it was pretty fucking intense, and people were just like, you know, standing on their seats to watch it. You know, it was just, that feud, I think it's been forgotten, but that feud, it's not better, but you have to put it just either right with or just right below the Von Erich-Fieber feud at the time.
Yeah, and I think they had one of those, like the big blow-off of that is like one of the biggest blow-off matches that nobody's ever seen because nobody ever taped it was that last Battle of Atlanta cage match.
Yeah. Yeah, I know how the fuck did they not tape that, dude? That was
fucking
the stupidest fucking thing I ever heard of because I would have loved to see that match. If that would have been a fucking pay-per-view at the fucking time, that would have been the first fucking pay-per-view I ever would have had my parents buy me.
I just remember seeing photos in the aftermag, and I thought it was so cool because it was the first cage match I ever seen where the cage had a top on it.
Yeah. So. I mean, because that was billed as, that was it, because they beat it for like maybe 2 or 3 years, and that was fucking it. Dude was over, and it was over. A couple of weeks later, they were fucking tag-teaming because of Buzz Sawyer's little brother, Bart Wayne Sawyer. Or Brett Wayne. His name was Brett Wayne when he first broke in, because he was a babyface, and then it turned out that it was, you know, then people found out it was his brother. And then he got beat up by, I guess the Road Warriors kicked his ass, right? So
yeah.
Tommy and Buzz fucking teamed up to fucking fight the Road Warriors.
And I think Buzz Sawyer was booking George at that time, and they went all around the horn beating the Road Warriors.
Yeah.
And if you talk about a guy that took his style from Buzz Sawyer, you look at Rick Steiner and kind of his wrestling style. You know, like with the clotheslines and the flying power slams and stuff like that and suplexes.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And they even teamed up a while. Whites had put Rick Steiner with Buzz Sawyer when they were in the UWF just so Steiner could learn some. That's kind of where he developed his style from.
Yeah, and they were in the Crockett Cup, if I'm not mistaken,
yeah.
One of them. And I wanted to talk about Brett Sawyer. I always thought he was pretty good. He was a little dude. But he was a good little baby face in Georgia. He wrestled in Portland a lot. I wonder if Craig would know him.
I don't know. I saw him wrestle in Mid-Atlantic and stuff like that. He was okay. I mean, he just seemed like the step up from somebody like, say, like the Italian Stallion or somebody like that.
Yeah, he was small. He was fucking little, dude. I mean, he was short, but he was good. He was like... He was like a Tim Warner, dude.
I remember a great angle in it was on the TBS TV when Crockett had taken it over, and Arn Anderson had like cord busted him on the floor and then like punted him in the head like Randy Orton, and then fucking destroyed him. And then the Mad Dog came out and was helping his brother, and Mad Dog just sitting there wailing like a dog, like he used to back then when he'd bark and whine and shit like that.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah. And I'm looking at here, and I just the name just caught my eye here. The fucking Blade Runners were I guess this would be their second territory, actually. Or no,
yeah,
they were Power Pro Wrestling first. The guys basically like trained. Yeah, the guy that basically trained them, basically, I think, ran some shows. I don't, you know, probably wasn't even that many, but they did something like that. Then they went to Mid-Southern for like a week or two.
Yeah.
And then they went to Mid-South, and I just remember how fucking checked up they were, man. And anyway, for those who don't know what we're talking about, we're talking about the Ultimate Warrior and Sting.
And this is when the Ultimate Warrior started. You think he was bad when he was a veteran wrestler? You should have seen him when he was young. Holy shit.
He was so bad, he was awesome. Or when he was the Deagle Warrior.
Wasn't that good,
when
but
he
I
was
mean,
the Deagle Warrior in world class, he was so bad, he was awesome.
God, I remember some of those matches. It's like you could edit this match, but it would do no good. If you edited everything bad out of this match, you would have no match. Jesus, he was so bad. But Sting, this is where Sting really developed into a good worker. They hooked him up with Eddie Gilbert as manager and put him in the tag team with Rick Steiner and in the First Family, and I thought that was a good group.
Yeah, they were a good group, and then when they had the breakup angle, that was pretty good. When they were like brawling everywhere.
Oh,
yeah,
I remember.
That was pretty awesome.
I wasn't there, but I wish I'd been because it was in New Orleans, like the Civic Arena. They had the Battle of New Orleans concession stand brawl. It was Sting and Chris Adams and Terry Taylor and Eddie Gilbert, and they went all over the fucking place. That was awesome.
Yeah,
I saw that on TV.
Yeah, that was pretty awesome.
Terry Taylor, he's another one. I thought he was tremendous.
And especially when he first got to Mid-South, because he won the TV title and the North American title. And he was
I
kind of
got
done.
Offended a while back when Brian and Vinny were reviewing a Terry Taylor match and they're saying he wasn't very good. Kind of offended me.
I don't know what the fuck they're talking about. I don't see how Terry Taylor can have a bad match.
He had some of you know, I put his punches right up there with Jerry Lawler. I loved his punches.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he was awesome. I mean,
they were comparing him to, I mean, he was more of a nature boy than Buddy Landell was.
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah.
Especially when he turned heel, he was fucking awesome.
He was pretty awesome. But I don't know. Yeah, so that's one guy who's like, you know, it's like
a murdered by gimmick. A gimmick just murdered.
Yeah, but it's a catch-22. Because the gimmick murdered him, but that's still the only thing he's really remembered for.
Yeah.
And then, you know, how many wrestlers wrestled in that era that we've long forgotten and will never be spoken of again, but yet Terry Taylor will always forever be spoken of as the Red Rooster. So, but at the same time, it killed his career. Not that he didn't have, you know, that heel run and walk fast, and that it wasn't good, but, you know, he just...
Heel run world class is okay.
Yeah, that's what I meant. I mean, it was good, but it was hard to take him serious after that. You know, or most people didn't take him serious after that, no matter what he did.
Well, probably...
And then when he became the tailor-made
man... Von Erich, he's getting the shit beat out of him by Kevin Von Erich every week. Maybe... I don't know. He lost some of his ability from having too many concussions from being in there with Kevin Von Erich.
Yeah, I'm not sure that happened. But let's talk about one of the biggest Mid-South, the angles in the history of Mid-South, and that is with Magnum T.A. when he was first coming up, when he was just first reaching his breakout status. You know, he was friends with Mr. Wrestling 2. And, you know, they were buddies and tag team partners. And then, I guess you could tell the story better than me.
Yeah, it was something where Magnum T.A. got awarded a North American title shot. I can't remember who. It might have been against Ted DiBiase. I'm not sure. Or Junkyard Dog or somebody like that. And Mr. Wrestling 2 had been his coach. And Mr. Wrestling 2 got upset. He was like saying, I'm like the senior person of this group. I should have the title shot. And Magnum T.A. said, well, here, coach, you tell me so much. Here, you can have the title shot. He said, well, I don't want it now, you know, trying to give me charity. And then it kind of caused a breakup. And I can't remember what happened. It was a while back, and I can't remember if Mr. Rhythm 2 got the shot and won the title, and then Magnum beat him for the title, or if it was like Magnum won the title and they had the feud. I can't remember, but yeah, that was like the one feud that kind of started Magnum right before he got to Crockett as becoming a big star.
Yeah, that's where they were like grooming him, because he had done, you know, he was like a freelance guy in Southwest, and he'd win some matches, but it was more like he was like an up-and-comer. Like, I remember he had an awesome match, TV match with Nick Bockwinkle, and that's on the Wrestling Go, but I remember watching that on fucking TV way back in the day. And when he got to Mid-South, that's when he really, you know, that's when they really started to push him. And, you know, he just really, he really clicked in Mid-South, and it was just a great angle. And I remember Mr. Wrestling 2, didn't he bring in Mr. Wrestling 3? Like a big jacked-up guy in a mask, and I don't remember who that was, though.
Hercules?
It might have been Hercules, because that was around the time Hercules was in there a little after, so it...
Yeah, so and, that's you know, what it might have been.
I know Hercules is one of the assassins. And,
yeah, that's right.
Oh, and yeah, it could have been him, because it was a big jacked-up dude, and kind of and light-complected, like real white-complected, just like... Yeah, it might have been him. I mean, I'm sure somebody else got corrected.
Hercules was the original Sheamus.
The original Sheamus?
If you go back and look at his skin complexion,
oh, yeah.
Like the match with the Billy Jack Haynes at WrestleMania 3. My God.
Yeah.
Just like
that. Yeah, he was the definition of a white boy, that's for sure. And, you know, Magnum. You know, he had a really great run. And then I remember, it's like one of the matches where you watch it, and, you know, usually it's because someone's leaving the territory, but the guy you don't expect to lose ends up, like, doing the job on the way out, and you just don't expect it. It's just a shock to you. I just remember being in shock when goddamn old ass, when the fucking, what's his name, old ass, goddamn it, Ernie Ladd, and the big cat Ernie Ladd, old Ernie Ladd, fucking removed the tape from his wrist and choked out Magnum TA to win the North American title. And I was like, looking at that, like, what the fuck? But yeah, but then he went to Mid-Atlantic and, you know, really took it up a few notches. And, you know, the rest is history. And unfortunately, it wasn't good history at the very end.
Yeah. He got the Goldberg push in Crockett, if you think about it.
Oh, yeah. I remember they had him kick Kamala's fucking ass.
Yeah.
Remember? He fucking...
Yeah, it was at the Great American Bash.
He was like the second person I ever seen body slam Kamala besides a Kerry. And, you know, he had a good body, but he was a nerd jack like Kerry. When he picked up Kamala and fucking body slammed him, I was like, holy shit. And then when he fucking belly-to-bellied him, I was like, what the fuck? I was like, oh, my God. You know, that match gave him a lot of credibility, you know. And, you know, it's not like, you know, a whole lot of people saw that match. You know what I mean? It didn't have the exposure they did today, but, yeah.
He would have been the NWA champion if not for his car wreck. I believe that.
Oh, for sure. Multiple times. You know, he probably would have been the big star.
He would have been the second fiddle. I mean, he had the name Magnum. He was just like Tom Selleck. You know?
I know he did, and Magnum, and that was a hot TV show. I used to watch that show.
Yeah, and they had that awesome feud with Nikita, which was an awesome feud.
I remember when Magnum, the episode of Magnum PI where he got stranded out in the ocean for 24 hours and had a tread water. And he kept thinking about his dad when he died, and that's what kept him going. I remember that episode. It made me cry. But anyway, let's get back to what were you saying?
Oh, I wouldn't say anything. I think that probably the two most famous guys that come out of here, well, to me anyway, are Ted DiBiase and Dr. Death Steve Williams.
I think you're being a little biased because you probably like Dr. Death as a wrestler more, but no, dude, it's Hacksaw.
Well, I'll throw him in that group too.
Yeah, I think more people probably like more hardcore is like Dark to Death, but more casual fans are gonna you know Doug in better. So I would say Doug and DiBiase, and then you know, and then Dr. Death just right under there.
For those that like laugh at Hacksaw Duggan, like he was a bad worker, you had never seen him in the UWF because I thought he was pretty damn good.
Oh fuck yeah, dude! He was a monster, dude. I remember I have vague memories, but I remember seeing a little bit of him here in San Antonio when he was young, and man, he was just a big, you know, not muscular, just a big raw bone dude, and just he was just a fucking bully, dude, and. I remember, in fact, this might have been the very first Mid-South episode I ever saw, or maybe it's just one of my first memories from Mid-South, but one of my first memories is them going to have the match with Dr. Death, and they're going to have their helmets and gear on, and he had got jumped, and he came to the ring, and he was all bloody, and he still had his helmet, and, you know, it's like his kind of gear had been ripped off, and Dr. Death had his helmet on, and that's one of my first Mid-South memories is that fucking angle.
Yeah, I remember he had the famous feud with Ted DiBiase with the, and this sounds like a Vince Russo match I'm fixing to describe here, but it was a tuxedo match that was inside of a steel cage, and it was also had coal miner's glove rules, I think. It was called like the best dressed man match or something, where they were
yeah.
Tuxedo steel cage, and it was like also a coal miner's glove. It was weird.
Yeah, well, for those who don't know, Ted DiBiase always had this famous Lotus glove back in Mid-South.
Yeah.
And did he ever wear it in the WWE or WWF?
No, he never used it.
I think he did. But I remember he always had the glove. And even when he became babyface at that last run, he still had the glove. You know what I mean?
He could at least brought it back in the WWF and had it, like, coated in diamonds and stuff like that.
$1 million. I'm surprised Vince never did that. That would have been awesome. But yeah, he was awesome. I mean, that's some of his best work in ring work is in Mid South because he had like just you know a lot of great workers to work with, and yeah, he was awesome, dude.
The guy that was like one of my favorite performers of all time is Hot Stuff Eddie Gilbert. I thought Eddie Gilbert was tremendous.
Oh, yeah, he was fantastic. I remember my first exposure to Eddie Gilbert was his run in the WWF when he was Bob Bracklin's protege, and then he would fucking wrestle Tiger Mask, who would come in, and they'd have awesome matches, and then he did an angle where he had his neck injured by, who the fuck? Oh, the Masked Superstar.
Yeah, we kept on doing the neck breakers because he legitimately broke his neck in a car wreck.
Yeah, and it was the same night. This was the same night that Jimmy took his girlfriend seriously died somehow. A lot of unknowns about that.
The thing with the Mass Superstar doing the neck breaker, didn't that win like most disgusting promotional tactic in the Observer?
I don't know. I have to check, but I think it did. It's time to change, you know. Neck breakers on the cement floor for an injury angle are considered disgusting. When you see the shit they do today, it's like
I was shocked when I read that. Like one of the ones that won like most disgusting promotional tactic was like Bob Backlund's WWF title reign.
Yeah,
That was odd. I think Dave was in a mood back that year or something. I don't know.
Dude, Bugsy McGraw won more interviews one time.
He did what?
That's just Bugsy McGraw won like worst interviews or something.
I can believe that.
But, what?
I said I can believe that.
Not even. He was awesome. He was fucking fantastic.
The best thing he ever did was push Bill Mercer down that slide.
Dude, all his world class stuff was awesome, dude. You never thought you didn't see his feud with the Superfly, and I'm not talking about Jimmy Snuka. They had Ray Candy under a mask, in a full body mask, and he was a Superfly, and he did a big splash off the second rope. Because if you knew who Ray Candy was, you know Ray Candy wasn't going to the fucking top rope for shit.
Yeah, he was the Zambui Express or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. And then, he had a great feud with Kabuki. He used to, like, imitate Kabuki and shit. He was awesome. I don't give a fuck what anybody says, dude.
He's like a 6'10 Mark Henry.
One guy who was really badass, and I remember seeing a lot of him in here in San Antonio, is Dirty Dick Slater.
Yeah, he was great.
Yeah, he was, because he could work and he could brawl, and he was, if you could black out his body, but you could still see, like, every movement that he made, you swear to God you were watching Terry Funk in the ring.
Yeah. A lot of the same movements. A lot of the same mannerisms.
Yeah, like the falling out of the ring, the fucking wacky bumps, the fucking just the kind of weird jukes when he's moving around. But he was awesome. And him and Bob Orton were a fantastic tag team. I don't think they give the respect they deserve. Because they weren't around too long together, but they were awesome. But Dick Slater was just fucking badass. In fact, he even could do an awesome Terry Funk imitation, because I think Terry Funk was coming into San Antonio and the promo tape got screwed up, or maybe it wasn't San Antonio, but the promo tape got screwed up and you couldn't hear him, so they had Dick Slater cut the promo for him, and no one knew that it was Dick Slater and not Terry Funk.
No. One of my favorites out of Mid-South right here, probably one of my top 10 favorites of all time, is Captain Redneck Dick Murdoch. I love Dick Murdoch. He looked like...
I used to love it when he was like 50 years old and champion in WCW, and he's doing fucking head scissors.
Yeah. He looked like... He's like if you would go to a family reunion and he would be your alcoholic uncle that shows up with like the 5 cases of beer that he drinks by himself, with just the big beer gut and no teeth and just, you know, talking bullshit. That's what Dick Murdoch was. Except he could go out there and he could wrestle for an hour.
Yeah, he was great, man. He was great. I'm going to fucking... I know all these guys are dying. I'm going to start begging Dave to give me a vote in the fucking... in the Hall of Fame, dude, because, you know,
Dick Murdoch got to keep up the fight to get him in the Hall of Fame to not make it. I think he's like the barometer now of guys of who can and can't get in or something like that. I don't know. He's like
the thing with him. Like a lot of people are probably listening, they don't know what the hell we're talking about, because you know he's his prime was such a long time ago. You know, I mean, his prime was the 70s and early 80s. I mean, I thought he wasn't great at the end, but. You know, but the guy, he actually drew money wherever he went. I mean, him and Dusty were an awesome tag team. I mean.
Yeah.
And, I remember they were the closest thing. When they were teaming, they were the closest thing you kind of would see to like a gay gimmick sometimes.
I was watching some old stuff, and this is when, like, it was like 87. He had turned on Dusty and Nikita and went with, like, Ivan Koloff and Vladimir Petrov. Do you remember this?
Yeah.
And he turned on them. And he was doing this promo, and he got the funniest line off on the fans. He said, "Shut up, you bunch of draft dodgers." And I just, like, died out laughing. I never laughed so hard in my life. He called them a bunch of draft dodgers. I hadn't heard that in I don't know how long. But, yeah, he and best team I saw him in was him and Adrian Adonis.
Oh, yeah. In WWE, they were fucking... Wait.
Adrian, he was a great worker. And I don't care. I don't care how many years in a row that damn gay gimmick won for worst gimmick. I still think that was one of the best gimmicks of all time. I love that gay gimmick. I don't care what anybody says.
Yeah. But by that time, he could still work for his size, but at that point, he kind of got too big. But if you ever saw Adrian Adonis...
Cypher at... at Piper with at WrestleMania 3. That was an awesome match.
Yeah. And he had awesome matches. Him and Ventura had awesome matches with Ganya and Brazil. And
Jesse was kind of, Jesse was very good aside from the posing and the interviews.
Well, I was all Adrian. But I also remember the match on the Wrestling Gold where he was wrestling Bob Orton, and at the end of the match, Bob Orton's the one that's fucking sucking air and fucking is all blown up and ready to die, and Adrian Adonis looks like he could wrestle another hour.
Is that the one that was the finals for, like, the New World Heavyweight Championship when they broke away from, like, the NWA?
Yeah.
And Luke Desmond.
Well, you know what the thing was? You know what the thing was? They were never really... They were really... I don't know if Southwest was actually part of the NWA. They might have been, because even like at the time, even the WWE was still actually a part of the NWA. But when they would bring in a champion, they didn't bring in Flair. They brought in Bockwinkel.
Yeah.
And they always brought him in. So to me, they were always, it seemed like they had more ties to the AWA. And I think... You
but
know,
I remember
Houston,
there was some
obviously.
Kind of controversy where something happened with one of the big organizations, and that's why they had that thing for, like, the World's Championship Tournament or something like that.
Well, they wanted to go national. They had, like, they actually wanted to try and go national. So they went, and for some reason, they decided to do it in Houston. So they went to Houston, so they counter-react them. Paul Bosch had a big show, and they sent the NWA World Champion, and they fucking sent the WWE Death Champion. You had both champions were sent there as a retaliation for them going into another territory because, like it was back in the day, it was like the mafia kind of in a way. So they sent their backup. So, you know what I mean? So all the local people are, of course, going to go to their local show, especially when you add the fact that they're bringing in two world champions. So it's easy to see how that failed.
Let's move down and look at the tag teams in Mid-South real quick.
Okay.
Obviously, the fantastic.
The best team of all time in this territory is the Jag Tones, without a doubt.
Oh, God.
Although, Pez Watley and Tiger Conway Jr. Tiger Conway Jr. was actually pretty good. He was, like, I got to see him in San Antonio. He was a good worker, dude. He was.
Yeah. Pez Watley, he was. I always love his interviews. It was a great interview.
Yeah.
And, this was really where, you know, this was where the Midnight Express started, the feud with the Rock and Roll Express. It kind of revolutionized the tag team scene in the mid-80s.
Yeah.
And one of the biggest feuds of all, this is like the Steamboat and Flair tag team feud.
Yeah.
I guess you could say.
They had great tag team feuds in this stuff. They had that one. They also had the fucking Fantastics against the fucking Sheepherders.
Oh, the barbed wire cage match. I remember that was the first time I've ever seen a barbed wire cage match. That was awesome.
Yeah, that was one flimsy looking barbed wire cage, though, when you really think about it. Because, I mean, I'm all surprised no one got busted through it. But, of course, they were smart back then, and they hardly used the actual barbed wire. You know,
yeah,
nowadays,
it wasn't
you know,
like today where somebody would go jump off the top of the fucking thing.
Right, you got to be hanging by your fucking neck by a barbed wire noose to get a fucking reaction. They just even got close to that barbed wire, people fucking started going crazy.
Yeah, but those were some, I mean, Fantastic and Sheepherders, those were some bloody fucking matches. My God.
Yeah, awesome match. And then you throw in Jack Victory as the flag boy and then Terry Taylor.
Yeah, they had the six mans.
Yeah,
I remember they had that
so,
one
I mean,
chick with them, Lady Maxine.
Yeah, Lady Maxine, who was only around for a short time. Just a really tall, punk-looking chick.
And let's see, they had my favorite, the Lightning Express, Red Armstrong and Tim Horner.
Yeah, they were
always
awesome.
Yeah, they were a hell of a team.
Yeah,
of course, you had the Freebirds in that big run they had in there. Remember they blinded the Junkyard Dog.
Dude, you know what? This is what's so fascinating about fucking wrestling fans and when people want to know if people actually think wrestling's real, when the Junkyard Dog was blind, he was pretty much under orders to stay home and not go anywhere because he was blind. So he made fucking thousands and thousands of dollars from people who were concerned that the Junkyard Dog was never going to wrestle again and he couldn't support his family, so they sent him fucking money.
Jesus Christ, I'd be begging to be injured in an angle like every 6 months or something.
Right, no shit, dude. Be blind in 1 month, fucking have cancer the next month.
Not like this was like the wealthiest clientele that they were entertaining. These were like pretty much, I mean, it was poor folks that they were entertaining. I mean, it was the fans, if you really want to think of it, say it. I mean,
yeah, it was. It was because his big fan base was like, you know, like New Orleans, and you know, there's.
I mean, people didn't have. I mean, these people didn't have much money. You know, I mean, it was kind of a big deal when they sending like $5 or $10 to the fucking Junkyard Dog. Yeah.
And then find out if Rodney's family ever donated to the Junkyard Dog cause.
He's from New Orleans.
I'm saying they're black, so they might have helped the brother out, you know?
Okay, let's shut up before we get in trouble. yeah, I remember it was a great story because, you know, the story was he was blinded and his daughter was born, like, right when he was blind, so he couldn't see the birth. Which I don't know, my wife's having a child. I don't especially want to see the birth myself, but maybe that might have been a blessing, but, you know.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that was awesome. And I remember they played it up so well on TV because it wasn't like they did it on purpose. It was like Michael Hayes had the hand cream, and I think Junkyard grabbed him from behind and it was like inadvertently went in his eyes. So it was like an accident. But then the Freebirds, like took credit for it afterwards, but just not like something. He, like, couldn't be suspended for it because it was clearly an accident. So that's kind of how, you know, Mid-South stuff was pretty logical and made sense back in the day, you know?
Well, most wrestling makes sense back in the day.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, it was real simple. Everything was, like, real simple.
Basically, Wyatt, you know, if he couldn't explain something, then he would just not air the match.
Yeah.
He was good at explaining stuff. If a TNA fan watched Mid-South, they'd be like, it'd be like a mind fuck.
They'd be waiting for this word, dude. They'll be like, why isn't Bill Watts turning and joining Eddie Gilbert in the Rush?
Yeah. But he said he was going to confront the Russians, and he actually confronted them. Well, this, you know, they're supposed to join up and try to take over the company, and then go to court, and you know, get the company from his ex-wife or get the tapes or something. I don't know. That's a shame. Bill Watts lost all them tapes in the divorce. That's a crime.
They're for sale, dude. I've seen some of them. Got some of them for sale.
Actually, he must have just wanted to be out of this divorce so fast. He just said, I'll give you anything you fucking want.
Probably.
I don't know how you get tape. Stuff like that. Whatever.
Well, a lot of these old time territories, they just taped over shit. You know what I mean? They just didn't realize what they actually had. And
yeah, I remember there was a story one time where it was like at the old where they taped the Mid-Atlantic TV in like a little studio in North Carolina somewhere, and Jim Cornette had to rescue some tapes from the dumpster. So he went dumpster diving and rescued like some old tapes and stuff like that they'd thrown out.
Yeah,
and,
crazy. One tag team I want to talk about, it's more of a world-class tag team, but they're listed here, so we'll just start, I guess, transitioning to some, like, world-class names here, is the Super Destroyers. You have Wild Bill Urn and Scott the Hog Gurren. And I remember the first time I saw Scott Urn, who was the original Super Destroyer, was in Georgia when I think the Masked Superstar was, like, injured or suspended or something, and so they brought the Super Destroyer in the feud with Tommy Rich. And at the time, he was huge. You know, I mean, he wasn't muscular or anything, but he was just, you know, a big, tall, 6'7", 6'8". you know, big dude, and he was a good worker, and he was the first person that I ever, well, I might have seen Bob Armstrong do it for well, I don't know, it's real close, but I just remember him doing the superplex, and I just remember
yeah.
being like, holy fuck, that move's awesome.
You mean
know,
Bob
now,
Orton,
you know,
not Bob Armstrong, right?
Bob Orton, I'm sorry. Yeah, Bob Orton. And, yeah, it's just, you see this big guy, and he didn't do it off the top rope. He did it off the second rope. But it was, like, at the time, it's like, that's, like, the biggest high-impact move I've ever seen.
Yeah, no, if you've seen, like somebody get up there and do, like, a suplex right off the top rope, doing it off the second rope just seems kind of, eh, whatever. It's just not much of a move.
Yeah, at the time it looked good. And then he went to a World Class, and then he started teaming with his brother, who his brother had been a mainstay in World Class as well, Bill Irwin, and he's wrestled in,
Wild Georgia. Bill Irwin. I thought he was a decent worker.
Yeah, he was also most modern fans would remember him as the Goon doing a hockey gimmick for WWE, where he had like lifts in his boots, or I don't know what you call them. But he was always pretty good. I remember everybody used to chant Chauncey at him, and that was like one of the first chants I ever heard at a wrestling show was people chanting Chauncey at him. I don't know what it fucking meant, but I just remember everybody chanting Chauncey at him, and he was pretty good.
Scott Irwin was one
he
of the first
got,
guys
like, the big push
that, I, that I remember, like, I think it maybe he'd been one of the first deaths that I remember, I think. One of the first deaths that I remember.
Oh, yeah. His brother died of cancer.
Yeah, he had brain cancer. And I was actually just reading in, like, some of the old observers I got, you know, maybe where David talked about he got diagnosed with brain cancer, and it seems like, gosh, it was just like maybe not even a year later he was dead, so.
Yeah, it was pretty sudden. I mean, it just happened. But, once they lost their mask, they just kind of never got their push. And it's just, I don't know, to me, the Super Destroyer kind of lost it in the stage when there was a smaller Super Destroyer next to him.
Mm-hmm.
It just wasn't the same as when he was in Georgia.
And Bill Irwin was also one of the Black Scorpions, for anybody that cares about that. One of the guys from World Class I want to talk about that was one of my favorites was, I love the Iceman, King Parsons. I thought he was tremendous.
Yeah, he was great. I mean, because he was right there, you know, just right at the level of the Von Erichs.
He was like right below Chris Adams.
Chris
Adams, I think.
He had like a great entrance music to We Are Family, and, you know, he had a lot of charisma. I just never liked him as a heel, though. I just never thought he clicked as a heel, but so when he was in World Class and he was a babyface, he was awesome. And as hot as the Fiebert Von Erich feud was, the little side feud between him and Buddy Roberts was fucking some really great
shit.
That was
kind of like
the
only feud that Buddy Roberts got to do something on his own, you know?
And it was a big deal. It was like, it was like two guys who aren't main eventers who were having a main event feud.
Yeah.
Because and then after when he lost his hair and he put the headgear on, I mean, people fucking.
Yeah,
people
and I got that because I'd never seen it before. I got it on the WWF DVD, and I was so shocked because Buddy Roberts actually won that match. You know?
Yeah.
And he still lost his hair. So.
Buddy Roberts,
man. Not like anybody would notice if Iceman Parsons didn't have no hair.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, he only had a couple of little braid things anyway.
I love those videos they did of him because he delivered ice and he would do the big hip butt into the blocks of ice and like crush them with his hip
yeah.
butt. I thought that was awesome. I remember he had I know it was like the storyline was like he was like a friend of David Von Erichs and he, like, got the big match with Harley Race and went, like, to a one-hour draw at the Sportatorium with Harley Race or something like that.
Oh, yeah,
I
remember that. Yeah.
And the best thing was when he turned heel, you know, it was, like, right when Chris Adams came out of prison in, like, 1987. You remember when he went to prison for about two or 3 months? He came out of prison and
airplane.
Yeah, where he headbutted the pilot or something like that.
Yeah.
And he came out of, and they did this, they did the promo, and you know, and Chris Adams saying, hey kids, don't do drugs, don't take that last drink, you know, don't do all this stuff. No, and when his interview was over, he was probably going to go have him a few Bud Lights or something like that, and go get in the car and drive down the road or something. But anyway, and Iceman was like his best friend. He was with, he came and visited him. And so they had like the tag team tournament for the UWF titles, and he went up against Ted DiBiase and Steve Williams, like in the second round, and Devastation attacks Steve Williams and Ted DiBiase, and Chris Adams goes out to help, and Iceman is the legal man. He stays in there because he wants to win the match, and so they win by count out, and then Chris Adams says, I don't want to win like that, and so Iceman, that's where they start the turn. He says, what's wrong with you? You've been a slammer too long? He says, boy, ain't making no sense. And so they do the coin flip, and Chris Adams gets to choose his partner to go on the tournament. So he chooses Savannah Jack. And then Iceman, King Parson, just flips out. He says, that no good, greasy chicken-eating, collard green-eating, black-eyed pea fool. I knew he'd do something like this. He says he's my brother. He's nothing but Norio. He's white on inside and black on the outside. He said, that's no good, Uncle Tom. And I was just like, this is. And he went and made himself a noose that he painted black and white like an Oreo that he hung him with.
Uh-huh.
So this is awesome. Big great promos like them.
Yeah. And one guy I want to talk about for World Class is Brian Adidas.
Yeah.
And basically he was like billed as like Kerry Von Erich's high school friend. And he was always like the Texas champion or feuding for the Texas champion. And I always thought he was better than people give him credit for. I always thought he was pretty good. And
as a baby face, I didn't like him as a heel. I liked him as a baby face. And wasn't he at the first Starrcade?
He might have been.
Wasn't he like
the
NWA
Junior? He did wrestle in Atlantic.
Yeah, I think he was at the first Starrcade.
Yeah, I do remember him wrestling in Mid-Atlantic for a while, because I remember that's actually where they flew him in from. I forgot who died. Somebody died, and maybe it was David, and then the Iceman was supposed to wrestle, but the Iceman took David's place in the main event, and then Brian Adidas flew in to take his place in his match. And there's like, supposedly the story goes is the reason he had a shot was because he was the boy's drug dealer.
Huh.
You know, that he scored all this. He was a drug dealer for them and got their shit, so that's why he was there.
I remember when he turned heel, he got, in the storyline, he got the blame for when Kevin collapsed during that match and almost died. Remember that six-man where Kevin just, like, I think they said his body just turned, like, into a big puddle of Jell-O, and he just flip-flopped around the ring, and Tommy Rogers of the Fantastics had to give him CPR.
Didn't he get yelled at for that?
Yeah, when he went to get his paycheck the next week, Fritz said, I appreciate you helping my son, but he didn't need it. I was like, holy shit, what an asshole.
Yeah, what a fucking asshole.
And then you remember Brian Adidas was doing the Oriental Spike at that time? Where he jabs the thumb in the throat, and they said, the next week they said he took that move like the previous week, and that's why he collapsed. So he got the blame for almost killing him. Good thing Kevin didn't actually die. I hate to see the heat from that. They probably would have gone with that story, too.
They probably would have, man. I don't know who would have been left
story
by that
where,
time.
Like, the boys got picked up by the cops, and they said, well, Michael Hayes, he planted something on him or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah.
That was weird.
Yeah. That's a trip.
Let's move down to Continental for a couple minutes.
Okay.
I don't know how much you saw Continental stuff.
I just saw.
Did you see much of
it? I saw
it like in 1988 when Eddie Gilbert booked. I know this is where, of course, the Armstrongs, which I think it's pretty cool that Bob Armstrong is going into the Hall of Fame this year in Atlanta.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Hopefully Road Dogg will get to, like, induct him. can do a good promo. Maybe they'll bring Road Dogg back. Who knows?
That or that's why they hired Scott back.
Yeah, that's probably it. Make me think of Bob Armstrong must be getting the Hall of Fame and Scott Armstrong's there. I like Bob Armstrong. You know, I didn't see much of him in his younger days, obviously. But, you know, I saw him in Smoky Mountain as the commissioner and stuff like that, and a little bit in the NWA in the mid-'80s, and he was okay.
It was pretty good because I saw him in Georgia when I first started watching Georgia. Every year on Thanksgiving, they'd have, like, this tag team tournament, and I think they won, like, 2 years in a row. I'm not sure, but I think it was two, but I always remember him being pretty good, and I remember him, he got into a feud with Roddy Piper, because when he was wrestling, Roddy Piper, during commentary, Gordon Soley said that he had skinny legs. And then that started a fucking big, big fucking hatred feud between Bob Orton and Roddy Piper. You know, nowadays you got to kill somebody, you got to rape somebody's mom and sister to get heat, but... You know, all he did was say Bob Armstrong has some skinny legs. But
remember
they had Adrian Street in Continental, and I got to see some Adrian Street here in San Antonio. And Adrian Street is like a forerunner to the Goldust gimmick, to the Adrian Adonis gimmick. He did.
I gotta be honest. The first time I saw Exotic Adrian Street was when I was like. Gosh, how old was I? Maybe 11 years old, and he scared the hell out of me. He just looked so odd and so weird. And plus, I saw him in that fucking awful wrestling movie. Grunt the Wrestling Movie?
That's
the movie I'm talking about? Huh?
I think so. Is that the one with Roddy Piper and...
No, this is a different one. This is like the guy... Like, the guy was in a wrestling match. At the beginning, the guy's in a wrestling match, and he accidentally decapitates his opponents who's tied in the ropes. And he goes in hiding, like, all the rest of these years, for a few more years or something like that.
I remember the name. I don't know if I've seen it, though. It's been so long.
Yeah, and, Adrian Street was in this movie. And remember he had that song, I'm in Love with Me?
Yeah.
That was awesome. And he had Miss Linda,
awesome.
And she would always bend down. And be like his stepladder when he got into the ring. She was stepping back. And I remember it was like a couple of years ago when WWF was over in England and some pictures popped up because he has like a school over in England, Adrian Street does, and came up with some pictures of him and The Undertaker and stuff like that, and some of the guys were at his school. It was pretty cool.
Oh, I never saw those, but that sounds pretty cool. But, yeah, he worked that gimmick awesome. And he even did a short stint as a babyface teaming with Dusty Rhodes. Where Dusty fucking kind of did a somewhat of an Adrian Street gimmick for a couple weeks. But he was...
Dusty turned heel on SmackDown tonight.
Get the fuck up, really?
Yeah, he's with Cody now.
Oh, I didn't watch... Shit, I didn't watch it, so I gotta find a link to watch it.
He turned heel on Rey Mysterio.
Oh, shit, I didn't even read the spoilers this week. Wow.
I hope they bring Goldust back and make them a trio.
Right, that'd be awesome.
Go ahead.
I was gonna say you could have a tag team match at WrestleMania, the Roses against fucking Rey Mysterio and Sin Cara.
You had Continental was where Arn Anderson first started. He and the team with Jerry Stubbs, who was Mr. Olympia. That's where Arn Anderson got lucky. He looked like an Anderson, or he might not have gotten as far as he did.
Yeah. The whole story on that is because fucking he was in Mid South, right? And Matt Bourne was gonna go to Georgia. And then he was looking for, like, an idea or something, and the junkyard dog goes, well, this kid looks like an Anderson. Take him with you and make him an Anderson. And that's how he kind of basically got his big break, because he went to Georgia as Arn Anderson, and And they really didn't, they portrayed him as an Anderson, but they didn't really push him and Ole together when he first went there, because once they fired Bourne, he pretty much was doing prelim matches against the Road Warriors, where he teamed with, like, Joe Lightfoot and a bunch of other guys like that. And
yeah,
he jumped out to the Road Warriors for a while.
On the Road Warriors DVD, there's a squash match from Georgia with the Road Warriors against Arn Anderson and, you know, some other jobber.
It's probably Joe Lightfoot or Mike Jackson.
Yeah.
Yeah. But who else is on this list here?
Dizzy Hogan is what started in Alabama. Also known as Eddie Boulder, also known as Ed Hogan, also known as Bruce Beefcake. I'm sure he was terrible. Uh-huh. As terrible as his first day is in when he got to WWF. So.
Yeah. They also have the other Riches listed as Johnny Rich and Davey Rich.
The Party Patrol.
And I always thought Johnny Rich was pretty good when he first debuted in Georgia. I always thought he was pretty good. And then when they brought him back, and they actually had, like, Tommy, Johnny, and Davey, but that's when they started jobbing out Tommy, and that's when, I mean, and then, like, Davey Rich was, like, really the jobber of the trio and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. He was in Mid-South as Davey Haskins. He was the jobber there. So.
Yeah, but Johnny Rich had a good little run, that first run in Georgia, but that was pretty much it, really.
I remember when they had Pez Whatley in Continental, and he was going by the name of Willie B. Hurt, was his name there.
Mm-hmm.
And he was in a feud with somebody called, I think, Detroit Demolition. And show you how racist things were back then. Detroit Demolition, like, did a promo on him saying, I'm gonna beat the hell out of Watermelon Willie the next time I see him. I said, oh, my God. And
yeah, get away with this shit back then.
Lord Humongous was here as that was Sid Vicious. I mean, he had a decent thing with Shane Douglas. They were the tag team champions, and it came out that Lord Humongous was really Shane's retarded cousin Hugo that had left that had gotten lost from the family like 20 years before or something. That was weird.
Yeah.
Scott Armstrong. I didn't like Scott Armstrong as a worker. He wasn't very good, I didn't think. Steve Armstrong was pretty good. Tracy Smothers was tremendous, I thought, as a worker. But he was really good.
I remember when when there were the Southern boys, they got a push that they were badass, and then they got turned into the Young Pistols, and then they sucked. I never understood that.
Yeah.
How did change the name? Fucked up everything for them.
Yes, they take it. It's bad for them to be the Southern boys from the South, so they make say they're from Wyoming. I mean, the South, at least, that's like got a little, you know, that's like got a little charisma to it. Say they're from Wyoming, everybody goes, huh? You know, it's just like, okay, that's boring. Plus, it was gone.
And then they have to. They had the cool Confederate-looking outfits, and then they went to the fucking gold fucking, like, overcoat kind of things.
Yeah, that was terrible. The tag teams I had here, too many I remember. I had the Spoilers, the Interns. I don't remember too many of these teams. I didn't get to see much of it. Jimmy Golden and Robert Fuller, I thought, were a tremendous team as a stud stable. And Jimmy Golden hit us off as a.k.a. Bunkhouse Buck, a.k.a. Jack Swagger's dad.
Now, you know, I'm looking at the thing, and it says Don Green and Al Green. Now, are they talking about Al Green, that the guy who was in WCW, or are they
no.
Like the guys?
No.
Are these the guys from fucking the brothers of the guy who made that steroid movie?
I'm
sure they're
the name, that Green wasn't the name, I don't think.
I can't remember. I'm stoned right now. I don't remember. But I don't know who the second spoiler was. Oh, you know what? It's probably not even. Jordine. It's probably.
You're thinking about the Bells, the Bell brothers.
Yeah, it was a Bell. That's what I'm thinking about. The fucking Bells. I don't know, I fucking confused the Green and Bells. Anyway, what was I saying? What the fuck was I just talking about? Oh, the spoilers. I'm sure it wasn't Jardine. It had to be the one guy from like Mid-Southern.
Mid-Southern, they always had somebody under a different person under a mask of somebody else.
Yeah. But they also
have
the nightmares.
You'd have people working three shows a night, like at TV tapings, to under a mask of somebody and then under a mask of somebody else. So
but I see the nightmares, Danny Davis and Ken Wayne. And Danny Davis is they're awesome, and Danny Davis has a big part to do with the success of the WWE, because he fucking pretty much trained Cena, Batista, Orton, Brock, fucking, you know, everybody that came out of Ohio Valley. So, you know, he actually has a big history in pro wrestling.
Yep, absolutely. Remember them, they were the Galaxians. I think they were the first tag team Jim Cornette ever managed.
There was a Galaxian, and then he also wrestled under, I think, the name Tiger Mask, too.
Did he? I can't remember.
I don't know if it was Tiger Mask, but he had a mask. Maybe it was a different name, but he had a mask just like Tiger Mask. It's on the Wrestling Gold DVD. It's like Rick Rude and Jim Neidhart and a Ninja and somebody, and they're wrestling a bunch of jobbers, and one of them's fucking him. But he's wearing like a little kitty mask on. And then we got this is the Soul Patrol, but that's actually making me think more of the PYT. Norval Austin. Yeah, well, the Soul Patrol was Norval Austin and Brickhouse Brown, but I remember the PYTs of Norval Austin and Coco Beware better.
I'm just looking at this team called the Rat Patrol, Johnny Rich and Scott Armstrong. What a name that is.
Right? I don't even remember that at all.
I don't either. The Rat Patrol.
What were they looking for, fucking rats before and after the show? Is that where they were, the Rat Patrol?
I don't know.
It's kind of funny.
And this is where the original Midnight Express was. Dennis Condrey, Randy Rose, and they had Norval Austin with them.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Randy Rose was, I think I remember reading about him being, I don't know if it was Smoky Mountain, maybe it was some other, like, kind of Southern show, but I remember, wasn't he involved in a match where they had to swim to an island and then wrestle on an island?
I don't know
what I'm talking about? I swear to God, I remember reading. What the fuck, dude?
The only time I remember somebody wrestling on an island was like Antonio Inoki and Mr. Saito in that death match that lasted like 8 hours.
Wow.
They came out of like different tents and they chased each other through the jungle for 8 hours in this death match.
That's funny. Anyway, my throat is actually starting to get tired here, so we got 10 minutes to go, so let's go ahead and wrap it up here. We'll be back next week, and I'm not too sure what's going on. I think Craig's supposed to be calling in from live from a TNA show, so
see
what happens there.
Friday.
Yeah, next Friday. And if not, we'll work on something. We got Brian Fritz the week after, so that should be cool. But
that's cool.
I'll see if I can pull something out for next week or something, and we'll figure something out eventually to talk about. So everybody come back next week. Everybody check us out at angrymarks.com. You can always download and stream our show at angrymarks.com along with a lot of other shows. And I don't know, what's the deal, man? Did your fucking sidekick quit on you or what?
No, we've just been having he's had to change his schedule around for work, and I've had some stuff going on in the evening, and we're going to start back this Thursday at 11 Eastern, 10 Central for Pro Wrestling Flashback. So we just had stuff going on and hadn't been able to get around to doing it. So
yeah, he's been too busy doing his participating in his work wedding.
His work wedding.
His work wedding. You know, it's a work. I'm surprised he's not coming to WrestleMania to come hang out with Sinbad.
I just like him to be on the show. I don't actually want to hang out with him in real life. So.
I can't blame you there.
That's the way it is with all you people that I talk to on the internet. I just like hanging out with you on the internet. I don't want to see y'all in real life. It's just, it'll kill everything, you know? I'm just kidding.
I guess. But anyway.
If I'm still in Dallas in a couple of years, it looks like y'all be making the trip down here.
Yeah, that's true. That's going to be actually awesome. I can save some money and fucking don't have to fly.
Yeah, you can just drive down here.
Yeah. Yeah.
So hopefully in a couple of years, I think it's, from what I've been hearing, it's supposed to be in Romania, maybe in Dallas in a couple of years, so.
That's what I'm hoping for. I'd rather drive than have to fly to fucking Toronto, so.
Yeah.
Hopefully. But on that note, we'll go ahead and end the show. So everybody come back next week, and we will talk to you guys then.